Kanto sat in an interview room, his hands cuffed to a metal table, the beady eye of a single camera staring down at him. He'd been formulating a plan that would have taken down the security team without putting Larry at risk when the kid had wandered over to them and started babbling about everything that had happened to them since his classmates had been taken. At first, Kanto had considered running and leaving Larry in the care of the station guards, but then he'd remembered the first security team they'd met who had turned out to be Xandri in disguise. This lot had looked much more like Kanto would expect station security to look, overweight and underwhelming, and several years past retirement age, but he couldn't take the chance. They'd been bundled into a wagon and taken to the nearest station. Another 20 or so officers milled around there, most of them preoccupied with the eating of various sweet pastries. Yep, these were the real thing, all right. Kanto was studying the cuffs when the door opened. A short but rotund older man with a mustache that appeared to be winning a turf war with the rest of his face stepped inside and quietly closed the door behind him. He carried a cardboard box, which he sat on his side of the table, safely out of Kanto's reach. Before he sat, he walked over to the camera, took hold of the wire dangling beneath it, then pulled, cutting off the feed. If this guy was going to try to be bad cop, he'd be in for a shock.
Comfortable?
Not really.
Captain Hollinger.
The man reached across the table to shake hands, remembered the cuffs, then, in a futile attempt to save face, turned the gesture into a thumbs up. He held it for quite a long time as he tried to figure out what to do next, then decided to pretend the whole thing hadn't happened and to just sit down instead. Reaching into the box, he produced a slab-like data pad. It was an older model. It had been an older model last time Kanto had been on a station, in fact.
So,
Howlanzer tapped the screen and waited for something to happen. The data pad struggled to wake up.
You've been a busy man, Mr.
Gar.
Howlanzer smiled and nodded just once.
Right. Multiple counts of homicide, wanton destruction of station premises and property, endangering a minor.
He jabbed a thumb in the direction of the now lifeless camera.
We see all.
Then you know why I'm doing it.
The captain regarded him for a while, sucking on his mustache.
The children, yes. But we can't just take the law into our own hands, Mr. Gar. Where would we be then?
He slid the data pad towards Kanto and tapped a video icon.
There's something I want you to see.
The data pad's ancient innards clicked and churned. A spinning icon appeared over the video image and stayed there for several seconds.
Give it a minute.
The icon spun. The pad strained, and then a recording from a security camera filled the screen. Kanto leaned closer and peered down. Larry's dad, Nobush, was trying to negotiate with the metal-armed Xandri. At least that was how it looked. When the audio kicked in a second or so later, it told a different story.
You idiot! You didn't get Larry! I told you to wait for my signal!
What did you call me?
No, I mean... Sorry, Ranok. I didn't... I just meant you should have waited for my signal like we planned.
What does it matter? We have enough children.
For a moment, Nobush looked like he was going to start slinging around insults again, but he forced himself to stay calm.
Yes, but I don't have an insurance policy on these kids, do I? My insurance will only pay out for Larry. We need Larry.
On screen, Ranok made a beckoning gesture. The gunman who had shot up the museum stepped into view, then Howlanzer tapped the pad and the image froze. Kanto hadn't noticed his fists clenching during the video or the way they had made his wrists swell so the cuffs cut into them.
That son of a bitch.
You can say that again.
Howlanzer slid the pad back across the table towards him. He interlocked his fingers in front of him and leaned forwards.
I've just been talking to Larry. I haven't shown him this, obviously. Probably couldn't even if I wanted to. That boy can talk.
Howlanzer watched Kanto closely.
He tells me you're the Magister.
That again. Yeah, he told me the same.
And what did you say?
I said not to be so fucking ridiculous. Now, Captain, what about those kids? My stepdaughter is with them.
That's beyond our remit, Mr. Garr. I'm afraid there are shock troops incoming to deal with it.
No.
Kanto's stomach tightened.
There was a squad on board, but they've left in pursuit of some other target. That means, and I want you to listen to me very carefully here, Mr. Garr, that means we have 12 minutes until the first squad arrives, and approximately 20 minutes until they begin the rescue mission. Have you ever seen a shock troop rescue mission before, Mr. Garr?
Kanto nodded. He had. It was not something he'd ever forget.
Then you understand.
He sucked on his mustache for a moment, then folded his arms across his round chest.
It's unfortunate, you know, that you're not the Magister. See, I met him once, you know, with the armor on and everything. It was on a station much like this one, but a little further out by the remnants.
Look, we don't have time for...
Howlanzer raised a hand, gesturing for silence.
The station was under attack. There was a fire on one of the decks. Smoke everywhere. People screaming. I remember trying to get through it, you know? The flames. But the heat. The heat, Mr. Garr, it was... I couldn't.
He looked down, just briefly, steadying his voice.
I could hear them through the fire and the smoke. My children. I could hear them, but I couldn't reach them. And then, there they were. There he was, bounding through the flames. My children, just babies then, in his arms.
The captain rubbed a hand across his face, trying unsuccessfully to disguise the fact he was wiping tears from his eyes.
I never did get a chance to thank him.
Howlanzer stood up.
The bioscanner you destroyed, it processes samples faster than I can tie my boots. Transmits its finding wirelessly, too. The whole chase thing you did was fun to watch, but ultimately pointless.
Kanto clenched his jaw and silently cursed modern technology.
I don't know who you are, but you aren't Kanto Garr. Unfortunately, there's going to be a system malfunction in the next few minutes, and that information, as well as all security camera footage of you and Larry's recorded statement, are going to be irretrievably corrupted.
He patted the cardboard box meaningfully.
If you had been the Magister, those cuffs wouldn't pose a problem.
He glanced at his watch.
18 minutes until that room is stormed.
Kanto nodded his understanding.
Is Larry safe here?
Howlanzer shook his head, just a fraction. Kanto nodded again.
Thank you, Captain.
No, Mr. Garr.
Howlanzer snapped off the most polished salute he'd managed in years.
Thank you. Justice strikes like a meteorite.
He never said that. It's a myth. Seriously, it sounds so dumb. Why would he ever say something like that?
I guess we'll never know.
Crisply lowering the salute, the captain about turned and left the room, taking care to not quite close the door behind him. It took Kanto a little under 3 seconds to lose the cuffs, then less than one to get up from his seat and flip open the flaps of the box. There, neatly wrapped in evidence bags, were the blaster, whip, tracker, comm device, and grenade he'd been carrying when the security team had arrested him. The folding knife was there, too, the blade scorched and black. Tearing open the bags, Kanto attached everything to his belt, then hurried to the door. He listened for a moment before easing it open. The corridor beyond was empty of cops, but a solitary figure sat on a chair across from the interview room door.
Hey, kid.
Kanto stepped into the corridor. Larry looked up. For a moment, he looked shocked. Then a smile spread across his face.
You ready?
The elevator glided upwards. Tonto checked the charge in the blaster pistol for the third time in as many minutes, then tucked it into the back of his belt.
I still don't get it, Mr. Gar. Why did they let us go?
Because we hadn't done anything wrong, Larry.
What about all those people you killed?
They were bad people, and they attacked us first. That's allowed. Encouraged, even.
He thought about this for a moment.
No, allowed. Anyway, the captain owed me one.
Okay. So, what's the plan? We just jump out and start shooting?
No, that's a terrible plan. We're not taking the elevator all the way. We'll get off on the floor below and...
The elevator jerked to a stop with such force, Larry and Kanto were both slammed against the ceiling. They hit the floor again just as the comm device let out a squawk.
I trust you are bringing the boy to hand him over.
Kanto recognized the voice. It was the metal-armed guy from the video. Rannoch, he thought.
Please wait where you are. I have sent some men to retrieve him. If you could possibly refrain from killing these ones, I'd appreciate that.
Kanto looked around, cursing himself. A tiny camera, no bigger than his thumbnail, was mounted in the corner of the elevator car, angled so it gazed down on them. Whipping out the blaster, he used the butt to smash the camera from its mounting, then crushed it underfoot.
Such needless destruction. We already know where you are. That achieved nothing.
Kanto raised the device to his mouth.
I guess you already know there are shock troops on the way. You have maybe 15 minutes until they storm the place. If I were you, I'd spend that time praying.
Oh, really? And tell me, friend, what should I pray for?
That they get to you first.
Kanto snapped off the communicator, shoved it into his pocket, then slammed a fist against the elevator's ceiling. A square hatch flew open on its hinges. Larry peered up into the dark void beyond.
Whoa! How did you do that?
Maintenance hatch.
Huh? Elevators don't have maintenance hatches.
Well, clearly they do.
Kanto gestured upwards.
Mr. Gar, I have been in hundreds of elevators, and not once have I ever seen one with a hatch in the ceiling.
Well, I've been in thousands, and they've all had hatches in the ceiling.
He jumped up and caught the edge of the opening.
How else are you supposed to climb out and shimmy up the cable?
Larry's frown deepened.
Cable?
Hanging from one arm, Kanto beckoned Larry closer with the other. Catching the boy's shirt, he tried very hard not to show how much effort it took to lift him up through the hatch.
Yeah, the cable, as in the thing that moves the elevator up and down.
As Kanto shoved Larry through the hatch, the boy suddenly became lighter, much lighter. This was unfortunate, as Kanto was still pushing with the same amount of force needed to lift Larry's previous weight. Larry flapped frantically as he sailed upwards, his shirt slipping through Kanto's fingers.
There's no cable, Mr. Gar! It works on anti-grav!
He bounced off one of the elevator shaft's walls and began to flip lazily as he soared up through the darkness.
Help!
Oh, shiz.
Kanto caught the other edge of the hatch and heaved with both hands, launching himself upwards through the gap. The anti-gravity effect pulled him through and he soared upwards.
Try to grab onto something, kid!
Trying, Mr. Gar! But I don't feel so good!
Larry, don't you dare! I mean it! Don't even think about it!
The puke emerged from Larry's mouth as a series of chunky brown and yellow bubbles. The force of their ejection, and Larry's angle at the time, propelled the blobs downwards.
Oh, funk!
Kanto shut his mouth as he soared through the oncoming assault of barf bubbles. A few of them bounced wobbly off his face and upper body, their gloopy, gelatinous contents quivering from the impact. The others sailed past him, and he was able to catch Larry's arm and steady him before the boy could throw up again.
Thanks, Mr. Gar.
Don't mention it, kid. Now hold on while I...
The anti-gravity effect ramped up sharply, almost wrenching Larry from Kanto's grip, before they both shot upwards at eye-watering speed. With his free hand, Kanto grabbed for the walls of the shaft, but every viable handhold was just beyond his reach.
Do something, Mr. Gar!
I'm trying! Just hold on and don't throw up!
Scrabbling at his belt, Kanto unhooked the whip. He snapped it towards a door mechanism as they raced past, but the anti-grav threw his aim high. Another story whooshed by. Kanto cracked the whip towards the next door. It wrapped briefly around a lever, then uncoiled.
Shiz!
They had to be past the floor they had been aiming for now. The roof of the shaft was maybe 20 stories above and closing fast. Kanto snapped the whip out again. This time, please. He jerked to a stop. Larry's hand slipped from his, but then the boy caught Kanto's legs, almost pulling off his pants. The anti-grav was still trying to drag them upwards. Kanto's muscles strained with effort as he tried to pull them closer to the door. There was movement from below. Dozens of vomit-filled bubbles rocketed towards him, then bounced off his face and arms. Through the bubble storm, he saw another movement, too. Two Xandri were in the elevator, peering up through the hatch. One of them said something into a comm device, and a moment later, the elevator began to climb towards them. Veins bulged in Kanto's neck as he tried to pull against the force of the anti-grav generator above them. It was no use. He was too weak, too old. His shoulders burned and his hands ached, and no matter how hard he pulled, they were going nowhere.
The bad guys are coming, Mr. Gar!
I know, Larry.
What do we do?
I don't know, Larry.
There was a moment of silence.
I know what the Magister would do.
Oh, no, you really don't.
I do, Mr. Gar. He'd do this.
Kanto felt something jerk from his belt. He turned his head just enough to see Larry yank the grenade free, flick the switch, then toss it down towards the approaching elevator. The grenade soared almost a 2 full inches downwards before the anti-grav caught it and pulled it upwards.
Oh, on second thoughts, maybe he wouldn't have done that.
Kanto tightened his grip on the whip.
Larry, hold!
Several things happened at roughly the same time. The explosion, with the anti-grav working against it, was a low-drama affair. Or at least it was until the anti-grav equipment itself was damaged, at which point the flames erupted like an angry demon. Almost simultaneously, gravity welcomed Kanto and Larry back into its bosom, and they swung down, then slammed against the wall below. Larry's grip slipped again, but Kanto managed to lift his legs and contort himself enough to catch the boy with one hand, while the other kept its grip on the whip. Below them, even as they started their downward swing, the elevator plunged downwards. With a lot of heaving, scrabbling, the odd bit of cursing, and a worrying moment when it looked like Larry might throw up again, Kanto got them both onto the narrow ledge on the shaft side of the doors. Digging his fingers into the gap between them, Kanto heaved the doors apart. He and Larry both fell through together into a small hallway leading back into the plaza. Getting back to their feet, they hurried toward it. There were low market bars and restaurants as far as the eye could see, their frontages plastered with animated neon and the odd flickering hologram. Kanto spotted 3 elevators within easy reach, but they couldn't risk that again. The Xandri obviously had some level of control over the transport system, and Kanto wasn't about to give them the chance to take advantage of it again.
You!
He pointed to a shifty-looking man with a face like a startled sky weasel.
What floor is this?
What?
Floor number. Hurry.
4-4-6-8.
Larry's eyes widened.
4-4-6-8? I didn't even know it went that high. Well, there's no way I'm climbing all those stairs.
4-6-8. We're 6 above them. Come on.
They hit the stairs. Larry didn't complain this time, largely because they were going down instead of up. He did open his mouth to say something as they began their descent, but Kanto gestured for silence. They tiptoed down a few flights, Kanto holding his blaster lowered but ready. The door leading out to 463 had been welded shut. The floor below, where the children were being held, was the same.
Funk. They've barricaded themselves in.
Can we break it down?
Maybe, if we still had the grenade.
Kanto caught Larry's expression and almost apologized, but there was no time. He took out the tracking gadget and realized he'd been too scared to look at it until now, when there was no other choice. The sense of relief when he saw the life sign data from Dinia's tracker took him a little by surprise. Of course he was happy. He'd been expecting that. What he hadn't expected were the tears pooling at the corners of his eyes. He blinked them away, zoomed in on the floors around them, then set off up the stairs again.
Where are you going, Mr. Carr? Shouldn't we be trying to get through?
Can't. It's sealed shut. The blaster won't make a dent in it. But I have another idea. I just hope we've still got time.
Floor 464 was mostly designated parkland, with lots of grass, a small lake, and a rainbow of different colored flowers that thrived in the UV glow of the artificial sun. The sights and the sounds and the smell of it stopped both Kanto and Larry in their tracks. The world they'd come from was just on the right side of being a barren, inhospitable dust bowl. The air was dry, the soil was rocky, and the flora was mostly limited to a variety of thorny or poisonous plants, trees, and bushes. Here, the air was heavy with moisture. Fat, furry insects flitted lazily from flower to flower. A soft breeze, pumped in through hidden vents, rustled the bright yellow and green leaves of the towering trees. It was, by quite some margin, the most beautiful place Larry had ever seen. It didn't even make Kanto's top 50. Sure, it was nice, and a world away from what home was like, but he'd seen far more of the galaxy than most people. So he recovered from the surprise more quickly than Larry, and quickly marched on across the grass. As he walked, he studied his scanner. It led him, in a zigzag pattern, past the picnickers, around the lake, and over to a dense copse of trees standing along the deck's curved outer wall. Winding through the trees, Kanto found what he was looking for. Having quickly acclimatized to the natural organic feel of this deck, the metal floor and illuminated sign above it seemed almost offensively out of place.
Emergency exit. Is this another staircase, Mr. Garr?
Not quite, Larry.
The door worked on a simple mechanical lever. Kanto pulled it, releasing the lock mechanism, then pushed through into a room that was completely unlike the deck they'd just left. It was a cavernous, yet spotlessly clean room, with banks of equipment and shiny chrome lockers lining the walls. Soft lighting painted the whole area in a comforting, fuzzy glow. It had the feel of a warehouse, but one that probably had an exceptional record for health and safety and record-breaking levels of employee satisfaction. Illuminated strips along the floor pointed the way to the room's far wall, where scores of escape pods sat nestled in their launch tubes. Larry gazed at them for a few moments, trying to figure out what they were. When it clicked, his eyes went wide.
Wait! We're not running away, are we, Mr. Garr?
Kanto shook his head and made for the closest locker.
Of course we aren't.
Unfolding his knife, he jammed it into the gap where the door met the locker body and gave it a well-rehearsed wiggle. The door sprung open a few inches. Pulling it open the rest of the way, Kanto reached inside and pulled out a lightweight evac spacesuit, complete with built-in breathing apparatus.
Here, hold this.
He shoved the suit into Larry's arms, then moved onto one of the small lockers. Larry looked down at the bundle of fabric and glass in his arms.
Mr. Garr, is this a spacesuit?
Kanto nodded and jammed the knife into the child-sized locker. The door opened, but there was no suit inside, just a stack of spare oxygen cartridges.
Mr. Garr, why do we have a spacesuit?
Kanto's blade unlocked the next door.
Shiz.
He looked around for a sign that would tell him where the child-sized evac suits were, but saw none. Maybe that health and safety record wasn't so hot after all.
Because we're going outside.
Kanto tried the next locker. No suit. Likewise, the next. Larry looked from the evac suit to Kanto, to the suit, to Kanto, to the escape pods, to Kanto, then back to the suit again. He wanted to ask more questions, but all those head movements had made him feel quite ill, so he concentrated on not throwing up instead.
Aha!
Kanto's excitement was short-lived, though. What he'd thought was a child-sized suit turned out to be some kind of bag with an oxygen feed built in, probably for transporting pets. Kanto moved on to the next locker, then stopped. Something niggled at the back of his mind. He sidestepped to the previous locker and unfolded the bag a little. There, emblazoned on the side in red text, were the words, Animal Vac Pack. He thought back to the old woman who'd stopped him earlier. She'd told him one of these things would be useful, but how had she known? She had to be a nun. It was the only explanation. She'd foreseen this whole thing. That would also explain the feeling of unease he'd had when she'd approached him. Nuns were some of the most highly trained killers in the galaxy, and far more dangerous than they looked. Still, they were generally trustworthy, assuming you weren't on their hit list, and most of them had a soft spot for kids. Kanto made a mental note to thank the woman, if he ever saw her again, then took out the bag and tossed it onto the floor.
What's that for, Mr. Gar?
That, Larry, is for you.
The vac pack with Larry inside had been heavy, and in hindsight, Kanto had wished he'd waited until they were closer to the door before ordering the boy to climb inside. Instead, he'd ended up having to drag the funking bag several hundred feet across the floor, the effort of it making his visor steam up. Now they were out of the airlock, though. The bag weighed nothing at all. Kanto had the strap hooked onto his belt, pulling it behind him as he picked his way down the outside of the station. Larry was hunched up inside it, floating around with his knees pulled up to his stomach and a look on his face that told anyone who saw it how much he disapproved of this. There was nothing to see but the stars above. Croish, he'd missed this. For years, he'd told himself he didn't need it, that he could settle down, stay planetside, take a job. But, croish, he'd missed this. He was gazing out at the abyss of space when he saw two Xyrtex transport ships come out of warp. They appeared one after another, decelerating rapidly, then banking towards the landing decks on impulse thrusters. The shock troopers had arrived.
Shiz.
Kanto bounded on down the side of the station until he reached the floor he was looking for. He stopped, then was nudged forwards a step when Larry's bag bumped into his back. He hoped the kid was okay. There was a little porthole window in the vac pack, but it was on the side, and there was no time to turn the bag around to check. He was still moving around inside there, so Kanto took that as a sign that the seal had held, at least. The handle that opened the airlock hatch was large and bright red, designed to be easy to see and operate by someone in an evac suit. Kanto took hold of it and wasted a moment collecting himself. How the next 20 seconds played out would depend on how deep into the station's security systems the Xandri had got. Hacking the elevators would be relatively easy. Getting access to the escape pod systems, and by extension their security cameras, would be much more difficult. If the Xandri had seen Kanto head outside, they'd know they were coming. As soon as Kanto and Larry stepped through the inner airlock, the gangsters would be waiting, and there'd be very little that Kanto could do about it. Still, they couldn't hang around out here forever. Kanto pulled the lever. The outer airlock door opened, and Kanto swam inside, pulling Larry along with him. Once they were both in, Kanto closed the door and pulled himself along the wall to the inner door. He couldn't spot anyone through the porthole window, but that didn't mean they weren't there. Only one way to find that out. When Kanto activated the door controls, oxygen flooded the chamber. Gravity returned quickly but gradually, pulling him and the vac pack gently towards the floor. Kanto threw off the evac suit quickly and drew his blaster just as a light above the door turned from red to green and the lock released. Nudging the door open, Kanto risked a peek. The evacuation room stood silent and empty. He listened, but the only sounds were his own heartbeat and the rustling of Larry moving around in the bag.
Okay, hold on. I'm coming.
Kanto tucked the blaster back into his belt. He peeled aside the vac pack's seal and unzipped the bag. A little waterfall of vomit trickled through the gap, then Larry exploded upwards and leaped out of the carrier like a scalded Yersk. His shoes had been painted in puke, but, miraculously, the rest of him seemed to have escaped mostly untouched. He must have batted the barf bubbles away just before gravity had returned, then jumped free before the stuff had a chance to slosh back down to his end. Larry's eyes were wide and staring, his hair slicked to his red face with sweat.
Mr. Gurr, promise me we'll never do that again.
I promise to try.
Kanto led the way out of the airlock, headed for the door leading out onto the main deck. According to the schematics on the tracker, this was a storage level with a large main warehouse space and some open-plan offices near the center. That was where Dinya was, which almost certainly meant that was where the other kids were, too. And Nobish, of course. Kanto was very much looking forward to catching up with him. He looked back at Larry and felt a twinge of something. Guilt, he thought, but that wasn't fair. He had nothing to feel guilty about. It wasn't Kanto's fault that Larry's dad was a no-good shiznod who'd tried to have his own son kidnapped so he could claim the insurance. The boy deserved to know. He deserved to see what his old man really was. And yet, Kanto grunted, annoyed at himself for wasting time. He stopped all the same, then spun to face Larry.
Look, kid, this is going to get dangerous.
Get dangerous? You mean it hasn't been dangerous so far?
Despite everything, Kanto couldn't stop his mouth twitching into a smile.
Good point. But I'm going to need you to stay here now. They can't see you in here. They won't know where to find you.
Larry opened his mouth to protest, but then reconsidered. He nodded.
Okay, Mr. Gar. Whatever you say.
Good boy. Find a corner, stay out of sight. If anyone comes in here, don't try to fight them. Don't try to do anything clever. Just put your hands up and don't make any sudden movements. You got that?
Larry nodded again.
I got it, Mr. Gar. You're going to come back for me, though, right? Once you saved everyone?
I'll get the kids safe, then I'll be back.
And my dad. You'll save him too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, of course I will. Now stay here, okay?
Okay.
Kanto hurried for the door.
Mr. Gar?
What is it, Larry?
Can you say it? Just once?
What? No, he never said that.
Please, Mr. Gar.
Kanto scowled and shook his head. He began to blurt the line out, then stopped. If he was going to do it, he may as well do it properly. He turned. He cocked his blaster and raised it, pointing dramatically to Larry with his left hand.
Justice strikes, like a meteorite.
He stopped pointing and lowered the gun.
There, happy now?
The grin on Larry's face said it all. He nodded dumbly.
Okay, now shut up and stay hidden. I'll be back for you soon.
Kanto turned to the door again.
She doesn't hate you.
What?
Dinya, she doesn't hate you. She talks about you all the time. She used to cry sometimes. You know, about not having a dad. Now she doesn't.
Kanto's throat tightened. He looked down at the flashing red dot on his tracker and brushed a thumb against it just once.
Go hide, Larry.
Then he opened the door, stepped through, and was gone. Tassan Nas paced between two towering storage containers, his blaster rifle handle gripped in one of his two front hands, the stock resting casually against his shoulder. He'd found a stack of candy bar boxes on his patrol and had spent the past 10 minutes munching his way through half a dozen of the more interesting ones. He was midway through something called a pilgrim now. It was firm on the outside, with a soft and gooey inside that tingled faintly on the tongue. He'd probably preferred the last one, which had a pleasingly crunchy biscuit base, but this one was good too. His two back arms, which were larger than the stunted front set, began unwrapping the next bar. This one was called a goosh. Tassa had doubts it would justify both exclamation marks, but its promise of decadent mallow and a smooth, frinkle-nut center certainly sounded promising. He had just finished unwrapping the thing and was about to take a bite when someone grabbed him by the head and twisted his neck until it went snap. Lostra of Ert perched on the top of a stack of crates, her narrow yellow eyes scanning the warehouse below. Rows of containers, crates, and boxes stretched out like the walls of a maze in every direction. She could see a few of her fellow Xandri down there, patrolling along the aisles. She preferred it up here, far from the ground. Back on Ert, she'd spent the first decade of her life high up in the treetops, never once touching the forest floor. That had all ended with the Gnawmite infestation. Her home had come crashing down around her, and her family had been bundled aboard one of the Xertex rescue ships that had come swooping down from the sky. It was the first time she'd ever seen non-Urshans before, and her introduction to a much wider universe than the one she'd known up until then. Down there on the floor, she felt boxed in, confined. Up here, she was free. Up here, she could see everything. Or mostly everything. She didn't see the stranger behind her. She didn't see the knife in his hand. He moved stealthily, struck quickly, and then Lostra of Ert saw nothing at all. And so it continued. The Xandri between the emergency exit and the central office died one by one. Shunk Nosta, son of Shunk Sen, had a knife buried in the back of his rectangular skull. The Garth brothers, Do and Tuss, lost their heads. Literally. Necks were snapped, throats were cut, insides became outsides. 4 minutes after saying goodbye to Larry, Kanto Gar reached the door of the office. It was, annoyingly, the only door, or the only one that could be opened from outside, at least. There were no windows, either, and while Kanto could have improvised another entrance if he'd had more time, he had no choice but to take the obvious one. It opened quietly, revealing a narrow reception area. There was no sign of the receptionist at her desk, but the spray of blood on the wall behind it told Kanto all he needed to know. He didn't bother checking the body he knew would be on the floor. There was no time, and if the blood pattern was anything to go by, no point. The inner door leading through to the wider, open-plan office area stood ajar. Sidling up to it, Kanto saw a guard posted just inside. He was swiping across the screen of his comm device, playing some sort of game that seemed to involve throwing flying creatures at haphazardly stacked towers. Had anyone been watching the guard from inside the offices, they'd have seen a hand catch him by the hair, then seen him be yanked backwards through the door. But no one saw him taken, and no one heard him die. Creeping through the door, Kanto stuck to the shadows and sized up the situation. He could see the backs of the children's heads, 40 feet or so away on the left. Miss Tresno and Magazine Mom were with them, both doing their best to keep the kids calm. A single Xandri stood watching them, his gun held menacingly in both hands. There was another Xandri standing further ahead on the right. She had a practiced, upright sort of air about her. Ex-military, Kanto guessed. Maybe Xertex, maybe someone else. She stood guard outside the door of a small private office. Through the darkened windows, Kanto could just make out two figures, Nobush and Rannoch, The guy with the metal arms, he guessed. It was almost too easy. If he'd had more time, he'd have checked the area more thoroughly, but the shock troops would almost certainly be on their way by now. He had just minutes until this place became even more of a bloodbath than it already was. The woman had a direct line of sight on the guy near the kids. Kanto couldn't take him out without getting rid of her first, and she had set herself up with her back to the wall, so sneaking up on her was impossible. He abandoned stealth entirely and blasted a hole in her chest. The Xandri watching over the kids turned, but not fast enough. Kanto stepped in close and drove his forehead into the man's nose, spreading it across his face. The gangster's rifle was wrenched from his grip. Kanto jammed the blaster pistol into the man's mouth, saw the wide-eyed kids watching him in shocked silence, then pistol-whipped him unconscious instead. He made a mental note to kill him later when no one was looking.
Mr. Gar?
Kanto pressed a finger to his lips and looked across the faces of the children until he spotted Dinia. She gawped at him in disbelief, her mouth hanging open.
Everyone stay here.
Kanto's shoulder exploded, spraying the children with crimson spots, his head going light as he turned to see a third Xandri guard adjusting his aim. Kanto's arm came up, but the blaster slipped from his blood-slicked fingers.
Mr. Gar?
Kanto's world ground into slow motion. He saw the Xandri shift his aim towards the door. He saw Larry standing there, a Xandri rifle tucked awkwardly under his arm, his tongue sticking out in concentration as he tried, and failed, to point it at the gangster. Kanto pushed past the pain and the fog and launched himself across the floor. He hit the Xandri just as he opened fire. Knocked off course, the blast streaked above Larry's head, and Kanto allowed himself a split second of relief before he and the Xandri hit the floor and agony flared across his ruined shoulder.
Everyone look away!
Then he pressed both thumbs against the gangster's eyes and pushed and pushed and pushed until the man stopped fighting back. Head swimming, Kanto crawled off the fallen Xandri. The door to the inner office opened, and Rannoch strode out, his metal muscles flexing as he stormed across the floor.
You funking piece of shiz!
The Xandri raised both fists above his head, and then blinked in surprise when a blaster rifle bolt punched a hole through his upper chest and neck. His mouth flapped open and closed, his arms sagged. He managed to shoot Larry an accusing look before his legs gave out and he toppled forwards onto the floor.
Whoops! That totally went off in my hand!
Larry?
Nobush appeared in the office doorway, his eyes wide and panicked as he tried to figure out what the funk had happened in the past 30 seconds. There were at least two dead Xandri on the floor, possibly three. Kanto was struggling to his feet, a chunk of his shoulder missing, and a really quite remarkable amount of blood smeared across his neck and face, and plenty more of it staining his clothes. And in the middle of it all was Larry.
Larry, be careful.
Kanto made it to his feet, but the floor rolled and undulated beneath him, and he quickly dropped back onto one knee.
Put the gun down, Larry. Slowly.
Yes, do as he says, Larry. We wouldn't want anyone getting hurt.
Kanto snapped his head around and growled at Larry's father.
Keep your mouth shut. I know what you did, Nobush. I know you're behind this.
He glared until Nobush began to squirm, then turned his attention back to Larry. The boy looked confused.
Huh? What do you mean, Mr. Gar? How is my dad behind it?
The gun was still half tucked under Larry's arm, the barrel still aiming vaguely at the rest of the kids. Miss Tresno and Magazine Mom, to their credit, had made all the kids drop to the floor. Kanto saw Dinia watching him, face down on the carpet tiles. He gestured for her to stay down, then beckoned for Larry to come closer.
That's not important, Larry. Just come here. Give me the gun.
Larry looked from Kanto to his dad and back again. After a moment, he nodded.
Okay, Mr. Gar. Whatever you say.
He shuffled closer. Kanto took the gun and ejected the battery pack. Only then did he let out the breath he hadn't realized he was holding in.
Well done, Larry. Good boy.
Dinia jumped up and ran towards him, then a hand caught her roughly by the hair. Nobush pulled her in front of him, a blaster pistol jammed against the side of her head.
Nobody move, okay? Okay? Everyone just stay calm and let me think about this.
Let her go, Nobush.
Dad?
This is your fault.
Nobush was glaring at his son.
You had to go to the bathroom. You couldn't have just stuck with the group. You had to mess it up.
Larry's face went tight. Tears filled his eyes.
What? I didn't mean... I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't...
You're always sorry, Larry. You're always so funkin' sorry.
I'm sorry. It's not my fault. I couldn't help it.
You're pathetic.
Hey, leave him alone.
Dinia bit her lip as the blaster was pressed more firmly against her head.
Nobush, let my daughter go. I'm warning you.
He tried getting to his feet again, but the blood loss was taking its toll now. The floor was made of rubber, and darkness was drawing a circle around his field of vision, a circle which was steadily getting smaller.
I'll trade you. Send over Larry, and I'll give you the girl.
Larry wiped his eyes on his sleeve.
Why do you want me? You already said it. I'm no good for anything.
Because, like it or not, you're my son. We'll get out of here. We'll go somewhere. I don't know where. Besides, I need a hostage, and you'll get me less trouble than this one.
He pulled sharply on Dinia's hair.
What about Mom?
What about her? We don't need her. We never needed her. She's even more useless than you are. Now get over here, now!
Kanto caught Larry by the shoulder and turned the boy around to face him.
You have to do it, Larry. You need to make the swap. You have to do it.
He spun Larry around to face his father, then reconsidered and turned him back.
I'm sorry, okay? There's nothing I can do.
Larry nodded his understanding, but said nothing. Kanto turned him on the spot, then spun him back the opposite way.
But thank you, Larry, for everything you did. I couldn't have got this far without you.
He turned him back to face Nobush, hesitated, then twirled him around again.
But don't listen to him. Even if he tells you you're useless, you aren't. You're a great kid, Larry.
Hurry up! Send him over!
Kanto spun Larry one more time, then gave him a gentle push towards his father. Larry weaved unsteadily across the floor and stopped when he reached Nobish's side.
Now send over Dinia.
Idiot. Of course I won't. Two hostages are better than one. I'd hope to earn big on Larry's kidnap insurance, but I'll have to earn big some other way instead. I hear some of the Remnant's warlords pay big money for fresh-faced young...
A torrent of vomit hit Nobush side-on, splattering his belly and lower back. Nobush jumped back in horror as the second wave of puke cascaded over his right leg and onto his expensive shoes. Kanto flicked out with his good arm. His knife whipped through the air. The handle hit Nobush squarely between the eyes. Then he toppled backwards, hitting the floor just in time for Larry to throw up on his chest. Dinia stumbled forwards and threw herself at Kanto. She wrapped her arms around his neck, and he succeeded for several seconds to hide quite how much it hurt.
You came for me.
She unwrapped her arms and let him take her hands instead.
You came for me.
I did.
Behind him, the door was thrown wide. His heart leapt into his throat. Shock troops.
Wait!
Kanto turned and shielded Dinia with his body.
Don't shoot!
Captain Howlanzer stood in the doorway, his hands raised.
No intentions to. Seems like someone messed up and sent the shock troops to the wrong floor. They're searching one of the under-construction decks right now. Probably blasting the place to bits, if past experience is anything to go by.
Kanto sank to the floor. Miss Tresno appeared beside him, and he felt pressure on his wound. Dinia knelt beside him, a worried look on her face.
I'm gonna be fine.
Dinia looked around the room.
You did all this? You fought everyone to save us?
Me? No.
Kanto nodded to Larry, who had now finished throwing up.
We did. I couldn't have done it without Larry.
He totally could have.
Larry waddled over to join them.
Do you know who your dad is, Dinia? Who he really is, I mean?
Kanto shook his head, but Miss Tresno chose just that moment to lean over him, blocking Larry's view.
Who?
He's the most awesome, kick-ass guy I ever met. That's who.
Miss Tresno moved just a little, and Kanto caught a glimpse of Dinia's smile.
I know.
And with those two words rolling around inside his head, Kanto Gar closed his heavy eyelids and drifted off into a deeply satisfying sleep.